Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
You know, sometimes I find myself getting so angry with the financial planning community. It feels like they want to progress, they want to be relevant in today's time, but they are stuck either with their heads in the sand or stuck way back in another time period that is certainly not representative of the time we live in now. And I think that's what makes the fintech movement so exciting. There's all of these companies and entrepreneurs that are coming along and they're saying, wait a minute, there are groups of people that are not being served, that are not, you know, participating in financial planning and getting the knowledge and the resources that they need to. And so we need to change that. And that makes me so super excited. But there's still a group of people very much overlooked, and that's the LGBTQ community. I'm Shauna Compton-Game. This is Millennial Money. And today we're talking the gap between the LGBTQ community and financial planning with the debt-free guys.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton-Game. It will expand your brain.
We've all spent more time with family lately. It can feel like old times, but your mind is on the future too, and what you can do to shape it. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work with clients to help them grow and protect their money with wealth management, trust services, and insurance, so they can enjoy today and ultimately pass along their wealth. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your dreams. Visit sandyspringbank.com/wealth. Wealth and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed, and may lose value.
Okay, could somebody please tell me how in the world did we get to August? Because wasn't it just like January, February? And now all of a sudden we're in August. Time, I feel like I say this on a lot of the podcast episodes, but I don't know if you feel the same way. It's like these weeks just evaporate. And now kids are going back to school and I start teaching again at Cal State Northridge in a few weeks, and it just feels like I'm going to blink my eyes and we're going to be back to December in the beginning of the year. So I promise I won't go on and on about this too much in podcast episodes coming up, but I mean, it just feels crazy to me. I don't know what it is. You know, when I was younger, time didn't go by that fast. It felt like you were in school forever. Like, was the school year ever going to end? And then you finally got to summer. But it just felt like this process. I mean, particularly in those dreaded junior high years. I don't know how you felt when you were in like seventh, eighth, ninth grade, but I could really do without those particular school years. Even just like thinking back upon those school years brings a tremendous amount of dread and fear to my brain. We recently went and saw the movie Eighth Grade. If you have not seen this movie, you absolutely have to go see this movie. It is so amazing. And I walked out of that movie and I could feel what it felt like to be in the eighth grade again. And it was not a very good feeling. I mean, in fact, that whole night, I sort of felt like I had to shake off this funk because I really hated the eighth grade. I mean, if you had a great eighth grade experience, like, cheers to you. But I did not. I guess that's the whole point of growing up. But anyway, enough about that. And on to today's episode. I have received a lot of questions from you, from listeners, about financial planning for the LGBTQ community and the frustration around not being able to find resources and asking a lot of questions about, you know, how should you approach planning when you don't want to talk about that you have a spouse or that you have a partner? You don't want to share that with HR. Lots of different questions. And I waited a while to do an episode on this because I really wanted to talk to people who are so much more educated on that topic than I am, that are part of that community and could really share insight into the lack of and, you know, what you should be thinking of when it comes to financial planning. And I think it sounds so much better coming from David and John, who are part of the Debt Free Guys, and they run this great website called debtfreeguys.com. And they're really trailblazers when it comes to talking about financial issues with this community and exposing some of the things that, you know, even I wasn't aware of in our conversation. I mean, there were a few things we talked about that just sort of blew my mind. And, you know, I think that's really, really important. You know, their kind of mission is to help queer people live fabulously, not fabulously broke. And I love that. I think that message works for anybody. But, you know, they talked about some of the unique aspects of finances and being in this community. And it really opened my eyes up to thinking about things differently and also to frustration I have with the financial planning community. And I don't understand, call it naive, whatever you want to call it. But as a certified financial planner myself, I just don't understand how it serves us to not serve all of the different communities, minorities, groups of people when we're talking about financial planning, when we're trying to give people financial resources. I mean, what good does that do if we're not talking to everybody? I get so angry about this because I look at the big companies and I look at their unwillingness to change, or they're very slow to change, like very, very, very slow. And, you know, even I go to meetings a lot of times, financial planning meetings, and people will raise their hand and ask questions that I just think are stuck back in like the 60s and 70s. And I just don't understand why, as a society, why as a profession, we cannot reach out and aim to serve everybody. So the beauty of that is that David and John have created these amazing resources. They have a podcast called Queer Money. And, you know, their goal is to connect the LGBT people with information and services they need, so they and the queer community can do more and be more. And what a more amazing message, particularly in this day and this time in the United States, than to have that as your goal and to be reaching out and serving the community that you're part of in a really, really powerful way. So I know that you're going to enjoy this. Look, even if you are not a part of this community, you're going to hear some eye-opening things that I think are going to make you hopefully pause and think about people that are different from you in a different way. And I know that the millennial community is very inclusive, and I love that. I think that is so amazing, and I get frustrated that people aren't inclusive, or at least that you can't open your brain up to think about somebody. They might be in a different situation, and to think about what their needs are. So on to David and John for a very powerful podcast interview.
So David and John, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. I think this is going to be such a lively discussion, and I've just really wanted to talk about this issue for quite some time. So I'm glad we're finally doing it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us. We're excited to talk too.
Yeah. So we're all part of Go Banking Rate's Smart Money Squad, which is made up, I think, is it 100 of us now?
I have no idea, actually. It's a lot of people, though.
It's right. A large amount of money experts, influencers, all sorts of different people who share articles once a month. And what I love about it is it's first person. So I don't often get to write about things from my vantage point. So I think it's fun. I don't know what you guys think about writing the articles.
No, I love writing in general, but yeah, you're right. We don't often get to talk about our personal stories. So I do love that opportunity here with Go Banking Rate. It's been pretty great.
Yeah. So the recent article that you wrote, I love it. You laid out some really interesting stats. In the article, you talked about the queer community has nearly $1 trillion in purchasing power in the U.S. alone, which is a lot, and spends nearly $100 billion on that on travel, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then according to HoneyFi's recent survey of the LGBTQ couples, your top discretionary spending categories are dining out, which is, I think, no different than anybody.
Right.
Entertainment and personal care. And what isn't increasing, though, is assets under management of financial advisors. And you also note that you're not saving or investing for the future. So I'd love to start off and chat about, you know, maybe why you think this is happening. You know, this community has a huge amount of spending power, but is still overlooked by the traditional financial planning community. Why is this?
Well, I think you hit it on the head there. The community is being overlooked. When you look at, I guess I'll just ask the question, when was the last time you saw an LGBT couple in a retirement ad?
Never.
And, right. You know, honestly, I can think of an online ad that I think it was Mass Mutual. It was either Mass Mutual Prudential was running throughout the year. It wasn't just in June. And of course, that I was immediately attracted to that because there were a number of couples in there, and included in that was a gay couple. But in general, LGBT couples are left out of the financial planning process. We're just not advertised to. And when you looked at when you talk about dining out, entertainment, personal care, those are all things that our community is constantly seeing advertisements for, and we're included in them. And, you know, I can just anecdotally, now this is a number of years ago, but John and I used to work for the second largest brokerage firm in the country. And we were the heads of the LGBT group at that company, and we had financial advisors who would reach out to us, say, please, can you help us get something that we can use with our LGBT clients? Something that shows, I don't want to talk about retirement with a gay couple, and there's a picture of the traditional white couple walking down the beach with their golden retriever. Is that we need something that we can actually talk to these people with. And we went back to marketing, and marketing basically said no. That they wouldn't take on that risk. And I think that's what it is. It is for much of the of financial services, it's just they're still steeped in this conservative not wanting to take on that kind of risk.
And I think what's crazy is, like, what risk is it? You know, I mean, that's the question I've always asked. Even if we're talking about minority groups, they're not represented in, you know, in those ads as well. What is the actual risk?
Yeah, I think over the last maybe 20, 30 years, we have started to see more women being included in financial services advertising. Schwab does a great job with women. Fidelity does a great job, and some other companies, in trying to connect with them. And you are starting to see some more Asian people in advertising, which is great, and some more African-American couples. And I've recently started to see some mixed couples, which is great. I think that financial services in general is a conservative industry, still predominantly run by straight white men. I think it's, in, you know, for whether we like to admit it or not, our country's relatively conservative, and there can be a lot of backlash for companies who are trying to be too inclusive too aggressively. I think a lot of the financial services firms aren't willing to take on that risk for fear that their clients with the most AUM at their firms will start to take their money out.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes complete sense, of course. So, you know, is this something, you know, when you're with your friends, is this something that's talked about often? I mean, do you talk about money? Are you have the same taboos of someone who's heterosexual who doesn't talk about money? Or is there more of a focus on like, hey, we're not being represented. We've got to figure this stuff out.
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Personally, our friends talk to us about money all the time. I think actually sometimes when we go out with them, they always feel the need to tell us that they're doing something good with their money because they know that, you know, we talk about this all the time. So personally, we do. In general, I don't think our community talks about money. I don't think that we're necessarily at that place in our maturation as a community, that money is a top line topic. I think we're with same-sex marriage passing in 2015 and our relationships being validated and the fact that HIV and AIDS isn't killing us in our 30s and 40s, that we are living to our 80s and 90s. I think we're now starting to have that conversation. David and I have talked about this a couple of times, and we sort of feel like since we have a foot in the FinCon community and we're watching all sort of the general population talk about money and we have a foot in the LGBT community, we sort of feel like the LGBT community is maybe 10 to 15 years behind the general population in terms of what they're talking about, what they're concerned about. And I think it's sort of a whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Because, you know, when you were more concerned about whether you're going to live until you're 30 or 40, you weren't necessarily thinking about, well, I need to save for retirement for when I'm 90, because that's just never going to happen.
Right.
Or when you're in a relationship with somebody and you know you can't establish a legal partnership with that person and that your next of kin is going to get all your assets, you might not necessarily think about saving your money for your niece or nephew who hates LGBT people. So I think now that we're sort of being recognized and acknowledged as valid and equal relatively to the rest of the community, I think we're starting to see that maturation, that discussion starting to happen. Hopefully we're having a positive influence on that.
And, you know, you brought up one question there. What's the risk to some of these other companies that are in the financial services space? Well, the risk I think is they need to look at the risk on the opposite side. The four largest banks in the United States have roughly $8.6 trillion in assets. And if we take a conservative measure, we say roughly 4% of those are in LGBT households, that's $344 billion. Wow. That's the risk. Where is that money going to go when the companies that start to take the lead start to include us, start to market to us, start to present to us in an equal manner? That's their risk. That's where that money is going to go. It's going to flow to that. And that's part of the reason why John and I are out there working with financial services firms, trying to encourage them, hey, you need to take advantage of this opportunity, not just for your own benefit, but you say that you believe in a strong LGBT community. Well, being financially strong is an aspect of that. And so you have the opportunity to help build financial futures for a community that has been underserved for such a long time.
Do you see in talking with these companies, I mean, obviously you don't have to name names, but do you see in these companies the willingness, I should say, maybe that's, I don't know if that's the right word, but the willingness to start making some changes?
Yes, in general. There are definitely some pioneers who are sort of blazing the trails. There are definitely some companies who aren't interested in engaging in that at all. So, you know, we're trying to invest as much time and effort as we can with the companies that are willing to take that risk to hopefully let the others know who aren't necessarily ready for that, let them sort of see the opportunities that they're missing. Relative to what we experienced 10 or 15 years ago working for financial services firms as a W-2, the conversation is a lot further than it was then.
Right. So progress, maybe not as fast as we would like, but progress is starting to happen, hopefully. And I think this brings up another interesting point. You know, I've been asked this many times as a CFP. I've heard this question asked many times in industry events. Full disclosure, it's usually from straight men, is, you know, what makes planning for the LGBTQ community any different than financial planning would be for, you know, heterosexual straight couple?
I love this question because we get it all the time.
Good.
And our answer is always the fundamentals of money don't change based on your sexual orientation or when you were born or the color of your skin, but the risks and concerns are completely different. And I think that's why, you know, you have a millennial money podcast. What makes money different for millennials than it does for Gen Xers or baby boomers? The fundamentals are still the same, but you're growing up in a different time and a place, and you have different risks and concerns. For our community, we can be denied housing, services, and employment in up to 30 states based on our LGBTQ status. So while we can get married in all 50 states across the country, if we put a picture of us with our spouse on our desk, we could get fired in up to 30 states.
I did not know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. And what's great or ironic, there's a lot of financial advisors that we meet in those states who ask us this question, and they don't know that in their state, LGBT people can be fired without recourse.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, there are no words, really, you know, and you don't hear enough stories of that actually happening.
We know of same-sex couples who live in these states who meet with financial planners, but they're not telling their financial planner that they have another half that they're responsible for or that they're merging their money with. So these financial planners who have a fiduciary responsibility to provide the best advice they can to their clients can't because they don't know the whole picture. But that's because the partners are afraid to disclose the relationship for fear that it gets out into the community and that one or both of them loses their job.
Right, which of course then has a very big financial impact on everything. Yeah. And it's hard to plan if you're two people and, the planner's only planning for one person. That's going to be a completely different suggestions and outcomes than, you know, if there are two people. So, I mean, of course, when you think of it that way, that has a dramatic impact, you know, and I think as a heterosexual female, you know, I would never think that if I put a picture of my husband and I up on my desk somewhere that I could have that kind of recourse, you know. So I can imagine, you know, what that must feel like to be in that situation and having to make those tough choices.
The interesting thing is it's not necessarily just about losing your job or that you might be denied housing or human services. When you really look at it, the base of that is that these individuals who are living in those states, they still live with a sense of fear, right? So when we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if we're still concerned with fear at the bottom of being able to make enough money to survive, being able to have shelter, to get the services that we need, we can't progress up that ladder to the point of where we're thinking about our future, where we're thinking about self-actualization. How do we improve ourselves? And it may mean for some of these people that they get stuck in a financial environment. They don't think about, well, how could I be a partner to someone and then the two of us could buy a property together or go into business together? Or they struggle with these ideas, and they unfortunately hear the stories of individuals in their states who this is happening to. You know, we heard a story of a lesbian couple in rural Ohio that was turned down for a loan at a bank because they were a lesbian couple. And so they obviously then, you know, their life all of a sudden becomes kind of caged in this mentality of, I can't take these risks. And if you don't take risks, you don't get the rewards. And I think that's another reason why there are such a number of individuals in our community who haven't progressed to that point of being able to invest and think about long-term future.
And that makes complete sense. You know, I mean, that you live in a state of fear about anything, and you know, you have a tough time making smart choices. That's just, you know, kind of the way our brain works, the way our body works. So I can imagine if you're living in that nonstop, you know, how that is influencing everything that's going on in your life.
Even in those states where they are LGBT people are protected, such as Colorado and I believe California, that there is still sort of these unconscious biases that can hold us back. And for those reasons, many people are still afraid to come out because even though no one's going to sort of break the law to discriminate against them, there are just those unconscious biases that hold us back, such as the University of Surrey did a study recently that showed that people who seem LGBT, they aren't necessarily LGBT, but if they seemed LGBT, they were less likely to get hired or promoted or getting a raise. And so if you have, I mean, you're
wow.
one, you know this, you have an entire career where you're not getting the same opportunities as your straight male counterparts, that you can lose hundreds of thousands up to millions of dollars over the course of your career that somebody else has easy access to simply because they're part of the boys club.
Right. Yeah. And the boys club is seemingly everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
It's extremely frustrating.
Yeah, exactly.
I love you guys, but so you're obviously, you know, incredibly passionate about what you do and about education. You run Debt Free Guys. Walk me through a little bit. You know, you worked in financial services. Was this something that just evolved for you where you thought, you know, we have to come up with a platform where we can educate our community? Or, you know, how did you find kind of the passion to create what you've created?
I think it was a lot of it had to do with our own aha moment when it came to money. A year and a half after John and I had been together, we were living kind of the honeymoon puppy love lifestyle of just really enjoying our lives and spending lots of time together. And of course, that equated to spending lots of money. And we were also, I think, in some ways living up to a lifestyle persona that our community portrays. And so we went away to the mountains for a weekend to visit a friend and kind of fell in love with this small town that we were in, a ski town, beautiful little ski town. And had this dream idea of being able to buy land and build a house and to have a vacation home. And so we left town with this fantasy in mind. And as we dropped in elevation from the mountains down into Denver, we were basically locked in a car for an hour and a half and had a kind of a serious conversation about how maybe we couldn't afford to buy land and build a house. Maybe we couldn't afford to buy a house. Maybe we couldn't afford to buy a condo. Maybe we shouldn't be even going up there for vacations because we were financial messes. And the reality is at the time, even though we were in financial services and helping other people, it was when we got home that we confessed to each other that between the two of us, we had $51,000 in credit card debt. And
is that something you hadn't discussed before?
No. You know, and I think this is common for almost every single couple that you don't typically start that love life conversation with, hey, how much credit card debt you have, or how much student loan debt do you have, or what's your credit score? Those are all things that...
It's not very sexy, right?
No, not at all.
Well, you could ask it, right? You could say, how big is your credit score?
Yeah.
Right, there you go. It's all in the wordplay, right?
Exactly.
But I think for us, it was at that moment when we realized that we were living a lifestyle way beyond our means and not truly living a life of what was important to us, that we recognized that we're not the only ones. And when we went through the 2.5 year process of paying off our debt and changing our lives and really focusing on what made us happy long term, that's when we said, we did come out to financially to some of our friends. We told them, we're making some financial changes. We've got a lot of debt. We want to get out of that. And we were surprised to hear and see how many in our own community were kind of in a similar situation. And that's when we said, that this is the whole reason we're here. This is why we're doing this. This is the reason why we're in financial services, why we got this background of information, why we went through this ourselves, and why we got out of it was because it's an opportunity for us to help our community in a different way than what typically most people, how they want to help our community.
Wow. Yeah, that's really powerful. And I love that you even shared that with your group of friends. I mean, that's definitely a very bold and brave move. And I think, it's hard enough to share that with your spouse or your significant other. And, I always joke with people that, we need to sit around the table more with our friends and not just share the good glossy stuff, but the stuff that, is not so good. Because I think in doing that, I would imagine that most of your friends felt like they could relate to you in a way that maybe they haven't been able to before. Like, you became human.
I think we opened up an opportunity for a discussion, especially amongst our friends, because Our concern was paying off our $51,000 worth of credit card debt. And when we expressed our concern and our strategy or plan for paying that off, we found other friends who, while they didn't necessarily have debt to pay off, they had other financial goals that would be more easily met if they dialed back their spending or if they had a better saving strategy or started using a budget, whether it was building a house or getting married. There were a number of opportunities for them to all cut back. And so we found ourselves, there were definitely some friends who didn't relate and kind of evolved away from a relationship with us. But we had a lot of people who gave us support and kind of joined in the bandwagon.
So I know there's probably a listener right now that is trying to, like, is yelling at me through this podcast episode to ask you guys, okay, how did you get rid of the $51,000 in debt? I always get questions when I don't ask those questions. Sure. People are like, why didn't you ask them?
So I think that it really kind of, for us, it was, we took some time and initially, John and I actually were accustomed to going out regularly on the weekends for happy hour, for going out for dinners, going clubbing. That was kind of our lifestyle that contributed. That was a portion of our lifestyle that contributed. And we took a break from that and we decided to take some time to talk to each other about what we really wanted in life. And I think that was the biggest first step for us, was just to be quiet for a second and listen to the true desires inside of us for what we wanted our lives to be about. But then we put together a plan. We cut back on going out. We're social beings and we love being around our friends. So we didn't do that 100%. We knew that if we didn't have some fun, we wouldn't keep up with it. I think that was one of the big things, is that helped cut our spending. The second step is John and I became meticulous about how we shop for groceries. And because we had been so accustomed to spending hundreds of dollars a week on dining out and hundreds of dollars a week on groceries. And most of that was financed through credit cards. And so we learned how to live very moderately when it came to what we ate when we were dining out. And we became really good at batching our meals and taking food to work instead of going out to lunch all the time or out for breakfast. One of the other things is at one point, because we had $51,000 in credit card debt, we were paying roughly about $10,000 a year in interest. I think that was one of the big shocks for us. Was when we said to ourselves, we went back and looked at our credit card statements for that year, and we said, where's all this money going? And when we saw that, we're like, $10,000, that's like three really nice vacations.
Yes.
It's a down payment on a condo. We just started to realize how we were giving away our hard-earned money for nothing, for the privilege of borrowing $51,000 on a regular basis. So we cut that, and then...
How long did that process take you?
That took about a total of about 2.5 years.
Okay, so not that bad, right. Totally doable. And I think what's great about what you're sharing is, I love when people share stories like this that aren't about, well, I went out and I had to get 5 extra jobs, or I had to get, 50% raise. You're sharing very actionable tips that are relatively easy. You just have to put your kind of mind power behind it, your willpower, your desire behind it, and you connected it to, a goal. You connected it to the vision you want for your life, which I think is really powerful.
I will say we did make some other modifications. I was fortunate to be working at a job where I could work overtime. So I did typically work anywhere from about 4 to 10 hours a week of overtime, which really helped me bring in some extra money and help pay off the debt. But you're right. We didn't go on a clean out the house and sell everything we have, or get drive pizza delivery 7 nights a week. So we
that
didn't,
would be dangerous for me. I would eat all the pizzas, very bad.
And then stop and pick up ice cream on the way home.
Yes. Oh my gosh, we are simpatico here. Yes.
But I think what you said there is key. We figured out what was most important to us, and realized that we weren't spending according to our values. And when we figured out what our values were, then we could use that as motivation to get us to where we wanted to be. And that helped us, when we were having those tough moments on a Friday night when our friends were all gone out clubbing and we were like, well, we probably shouldn't, we can't afford it. We would think, do we want to reach our goal, or do we want to go out clubbing? A question we like to ask ourselves all the time is, do we want to go down the street here in Denver, Colorado, and have a margarita at the local Mexican or taco bar, or would we rather wait a little bit longer, save the money, and have that margarita on the beach in Puerto Vallarta? And it's always Puerto Vallarta.
Yes, I was going to say, I have a feeling which one's going to win there.
The other thing about what we did, and I think this is the case for the vast majority of people who are in debt, especially when it's consumer debt, is it's not about how much money we make. It's about how much money we spend. And more often than not, we're spending more than we make, simply because we have a desire, a want, or we feel compelled to live up to someone else's expectations. And so the majority of us don't have to get that extra job. We don't have to. It's making some small changes in the way you live your life, and you will watch that debt melt away.
That's such great advice. I love it. Yeah, totally echo that. And you guys are also podcast hosts. You host a podcast called Queer Money. And I would imagine, just like myself, you get asked a lot of questions about finances for your community. Are there any kind of common questions that come up, that come to mind, that you can demystify?
Yes.
Yes, period.
Now listen to our show.
Right?
Yeah, I don't want to give it away. A very common question that we get from our community, which tends to skew more towards gay men, is, why is it so expensive to be gay? And our answer is always, it's not more expensive to be gay. That's just a perception that's been put out there by the media, and we've tacked on to it. And so just for a little bit of context around that, many of us who are alive today came from a time and a place when it wasn't okay to be gay. So we kind of went through our teen years, our prepubescent years, not necessarily having similar or corresponding relationships that our straight peers had. So many of us didn't have our first boyfriends or partners, I should say, until we were in our 20s and 30s. And so many of us are making up for lost time, because we didn't have those relationships. We didn't mature at the same rate, at the same age. But then I think also because we sort of, many of us suffered from being bullied or being marginalized, when we finally find our community of other LGBT people, then we strive for whatever we can do to make sure that we fit in. And so if that means overspending religiously to have the right clothing, to have the right car, to have the right house, all that stuff, then that's what we end up doing. And it doesn't help that sort of the media puts out there that everyone is this white gay couple, upwardly mobile, earning millions of dollars, living in the middle of the heart of LA. You know, we're not all Mitch and Cam, and that's okay.
But we want to be, right?
Right. But that's okay. If we're not, and we need to, you know, we can still have a great quality of life if we spend according to, one, our values, and according to our income or earning. And so that's part of what our, that's a very common question that we get from, it's just a mental shift that we're trying to get our community to adapt to.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think that's fantastic. So, you know, kind of last question here, if there's somebody listening to this podcast, you know, part of the LGBTQ community, and, you know, they're feeling lost about their finances, or maybe even just feeling lost in general, you know, other than Debt-Free Guys and your podcast, Queer Money, you know, what are some of the other resources, or what are some of the other pieces of advice that you would give someone, you know, after going through what you have and learning all these really impactful financial lessons?
Well, I will say, up until recently, probably the last 6 months to a year, there really has been a dearth in our community when it comes to personal finance bloggers, authors, and individuals who are out there trying to help our community. So there aren't a lot of resources. There are some coming online right now, which we're really excited about. We do have a Facebook group called Queer Money, and it's a private group, partly because people do express some feelings in there, or some they express some of their concerns and actually talk numbers. But the nice thing is that there are a couple of other individuals in there who are financial advisors. There are a couple of others individuals in there who do run LGBT blogs, and they are, as a community, we're starting to talk more about money. I will highlight David Ray of financialplannerla.com. He's got a great style of writing. He's very funny, oftentimes very catty, but I think he also conveys a good message of making sure that you're on track financially. And then there's a podcast that we've recently started listening to called The Out Entrepreneur. I think his name is Rhodes. His goal is to encourage other individuals in our community to be aspirational beyond the 9-to-5, to start taking those risks. And we know that there's some financial aspects to that. So we are appreciating that podcast right now.
That's fantastic. Well, David and John, this has been such a great podcast. I feel like we could talk for a lot longer. And I really appreciate you sharing this information. I know that, you know, the listeners, it's definitely a topic that, you know, I've wanted to talk about for a long time, but I want to talk about it in a real kind of smart, educated way. So I just can't thank you enough. And tell the listeners, other than the Facebook group, where they can go to find you.
Before I do that, I think she just called us smart.
I did call you smart.
I love it. So other than DebtFreeGuys.com and the Queer Money Facebook group, we are pretty much Debt Free Guys on every social media platform, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And then you can always find the Queer Money podcast at queer.money.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Join us back on Friday for a brand new Millennial Money podcast episode. And of course, as always, all the Millennial Money episodes are free. They're resources for you that I provide so that you can learn this important information, hear different opinions, learn all the different financial tips and tricks that you need to know. As always, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Shauna Game. And if you love this podcast, do me a favor, share it with your friends, shout it out on social media, and head on over to the link in any podcast player that you're listening to this episode in and leave us a review.